Non-violence in today's world is the topic of our discussion today. This talk was planned in the context of Gandhi Jayanti, which was observed on the 2nd of October, yesterday. Gandhiji devoted whole of his life in experimenting with truth, practical application of what he understood of truth in every aspect of his life, public and private. For Gandhiji, truth and non-violence are synonymous. But what do we understand by truth? And what exactly do we understand by non-violence? We who aspire to live a meaningful life, a purposeful life, who wish to proceed on the path leading to higher life, it is very important that we understand what truth and non-violence mean and incorporate them in our life and try to practice them. In this alone lies man's true happiness, peace, and real progress. Not having understood the meaning of these two synonyms, truth and non-violence, Gandhiji is much misunderstood. Our endeavor will be in this talk to present, as this student understand, the real significance and supreme importance of this twin doctrine of truth and non-violence. What do we mean by violence? Violence means to carry force towards something, use force to achieve something which hurts someone, which causes pain to someone. Violentia, the Latin word. The literal meaning of it is vehemence, impetuosity. In other words, force used to accomplish something personal by hurting another person or any living being is violence. There are various kinds of violence. Physical violence. Physical violence is when we hurt someone physically, using physical force. There are many examples of that. To slap someone is physically hurting someone. In playing games in the heat of the moment, one of the players get hurt by another player. It is physical violence. In order to discipline children, sometimes the parents spank children with the intention of teaching the child the right behavior. That is using physical violence. But physical violence is the least of the violence. The more potent violence than physical is verbal violence, a harsh speech, an abusive language, which we use to offend someone or defend ourselves when we think someone has hurt us is violence, verbal violence. And it is more lethal than mere physical violence. Any physical act done without thought, without much thought going into it, is the least productive of any effect. But what is most productive of consequences are our speech or words, thought, feeling, and motive. So, harsh speech, abusive language, these are verbal violence. Now, a person may be outwardly very polite. He doesn't show the actual emotion inside. Polite and courteous. But that is not the real criterion of a good behavior. But what is of importance is what is the what is going on in the mind and heart. That is more important. If the mind and heart are rooted in hatred, anger, or vengeance, someone has hurt me, I nurse a grievance against that someone and seek to wreak vengeance. That's most terrible form of violence. And carry gossip, slander someone in speech is another form of violence. Rancor and thoughts of lust, these are very potent forms of violence productive of a series of evil results which lasts till eternity. There is another very potent forms of violence: envy, jealousy. Envy and jealousy. When we see someone who is accomplished, we feel envious. Oh, I also must have been. I envy him. Jealousy. We even go to the extent of inwardly resenting why he should be so accomplished. And still worse than this is when we see someone has earned a good name, a reputation, or fortune has favored him, then we feel a sort of a pain that someone is favored. These are all very potent forms of violence. Now, in all actions, it is the intent and the motive are the most important things. But in case of these very base form of violence like lust, envy, jealousy, vengeance, hatred, what good motive can be there? So, these negative feelings are invariably bad in intention and worse in motive. So we see here thought, feeling, emotion, will or volition are the real source of our action and real plane of action, not the physical at all. And it arises from our principle of desire, kama. Now, we can make a small digression to see how potent these forms of violence are. A small digression. Now, there's a belief among the Hindus, Jains and Buddhists that one who commits sin may be reborn in plants or become a stone or born as an animal. It is a superstition, misunderstood. It arises from a misunderstanding of the laws of karma and reincarnation. The truth of the matter is, if this truth of the matter is well known, this superstition will disappear. One of the truth, the other one will not go into it because of that will be too much of a digression. One of the truth of this is that our inner subtle body, our astral body, takes on the shape and the character of our thoughts and feelings and motive. For instance, a man given to wickedness of violent anger, thought, you know, envy, jealousy, when this is cultivated carelessly, then the inner astral body takes on the shape of that animal. The character of which resembles most the type of negative feeling that he is generating. A man given to vengeance and anger, his inner body may take on the shape of a serpent or of a jackal or of a hyena, things like that. So when he dies and passes away, he leaves a kamarupa in the shape of an animal. Whatever animal, his base nature and evil thoughts had generated, and a clairvoyant seeing in the astral light, oh, this man is born as a hyena, this man is born as a swine, and so on and so forth. Actually, he's not reborn as any of this. Once a man, always a man. The soul, human soul, can never regress into the lower kingdoms of nature. It is his thoughts coalescing with the astral body, the thought elementals, taking on the character of this animal, take on that shape. So this goes to show how our inner being gets corrupted and takes on the character of the animal which our base nature most resembles. So therefore, the source, where it is the source of violence? The source of violence is in thoughts having their base in and spring from kama, the passions and desires, and intent and motive. If the intent and motive is selfish, there is inevitably violence in it. Now, for instance, we have, desire and ambition to accomplish so many things without any thought for the consequences it may produce on others. So we are blinded by our own fulfillment of our own desire and passion without giving a thought what effect it may have our own future and consequences it produces on society and others. For instance, take a politician. He has an ambition to become a leader and rule, and he pursues his ambition at any cost, which results in great harm to society, to the people whom he deceives. So this is political ambition hurting himself and hurting society. This is a violence. Now we have in the history of the movement, there were some very ambitious people who came into the Theosophical Society who aspired to become the leaders of Theosophical Society and try to dislodge the messengers, Judge and HPP. And so powerful were they in their ambition, they convulsed the whole society. Of course, they didn't succeed, but then this is what happened. Professor Kuwe, for instance. And then we have the affairs of Coulombs, whom HBB saved and took them into her household out of compassion for their pitiable condition. And the Coulombs were jealous of HBB's popularity and tried to do harm to her, destroy the society. Whole society was convulsed. Now see how ambition, jealousy, what damage it does. Just, there are so many examples like this we can see in daily life. Now, violence is least when we direct our desire principle, karmic principle, towards sattva, towards truth, towards higher life. Now, karma, principle of karma, the principle of passion and desire, is a motor power of the human being, of everything in nature for that matter. It is a motor power. It is a propelling force. How do we use this force? We can use this power either to accomplish selfish desires and passions of lower nature with all its consequences, in which is inherent violence, or direct that power, the principle of karma, the motor power, the propelling force towards truth. And towards truth means towards the understanding of the true nature of the self and understanding of the absolute, unerring, undeviating justice of the moral order of the universe. This Gandhiji called as God, truth. So, when the mind and heart of a man is devoted to the understanding and comprehension of the true nature of the self and conviction of universal brotherhood, and aspires to develop virtues, ambition becomes aspiration. As one's consciousness rises higher, it rises and perceives more and more of unity, more and more of harmony, more and more of interdependence of all, and less of selfish intent and motive. This transformation takes place when the karmic principle is directed to truth, towards truth. By truth means the true nature of the self, which is one and indivisible, though appearing as divisible among creatures, among men. And when this perception takes place, selfishness will give rise to altruism. And all the negative emotions begin to dissipate, and unselfish love and devotion take root in heart. It will be devotion to all becomes a prime motive in life. So goodwill and forgiveness, the virtues of goodwill and forgiveness come naturally to the one who lives the higher life. This is called supreme virtue. So we see here how truth and non-violence are inseparable. True non-violence comes from true perception of the true nature of the self and justice of the karmic law, which is the law of our own being. This is on one side. The other side is the selfishness and passions of the personal nature, and there inheres violence. It is supreme vice. Supreme vice at one end and supreme virtue at the other. So till we cultivate this higher life, we are still not overcome the personal nature. Therefore, violence is still present in us. Violence is seeped in us. Our whole nature is soaked in violence. We have to admit it, because as long as there is selfish intent and motive, violence is there, one form or the other. And all those negative qualities will be present in one form or the other. So because of the violence present in us, the animal world sense it. This is the reason why the animal world is antagonistic to man. This is why the whole nature is not friendly to man, because man is unfriendly to himself, unfriendly to others, because of his passions and desires, thought rooted in that. But when this virtue of non-violence is cultivated, which Gandhiji's life's mission was to cultivate this virtue of non-violence and truth to the utmost in every aspect of his life. And what is the power of it? What is the power of it? We have been studying Patanjali Yoga aphorisms in the Saturday study class. In the yoga aphorisms, we have seen how, what are the practices which are conducive to concentration, 8 in number. Out of these 8 disciplines, 2 are the most important: forbearance and religious observances, yama and niyama. Let's take only yama. It is this virtues, the sage says, is not only for yogis. It is meant to be practiced by all people, every man and woman, in ordinary life even. So it is called the supreme universal great duties. It consists of not killing, ahimsa, veracity, truthfulness, not stealing, asteya, continence, brahmacharya, and not committing aparigraha. Now we have no time to consider all this, but it is our duty to study each one of this, their basis, their rationale, and try to incorporate in our life. So this will give rise to, when this is cultivated to the highest extent, what happens? Patanjali says, When harmlessness and kindness are fully developed in the yogi, him who has attained to cultivation of enlightenment of the soul, there is a complete absence of enmity both in men and animals among all that are near to him. So he has no fear of man. He has no fear of beasts. He has no fear of men are not afraid of him. Beasts of the field are not afraid of him. He moves about freely. Nature is, you know, reciprocates. So this is stated in the book of Job, if you remember. There, the same thing is stated, that one who has cultivated this to the utmost, to him it is addressed, thou shalt be in league with the stones of the field, and the beasts of the field will be at peace with thee. So that is the power of truth and non-violence. You have numerous examples historically. Now, read the epics of India, the Puranas, Bhagavad Purana especially, where you find innumerable instances of masters, the great rishis, having established their ashrams in the pristine forest abodes. And there, the animal world become friendly to them. They are not harmed by wild animals, nor do they have any intent of harming others. And there are many historical examples again, like Basavanna, the great sage reformer of Karnataka. One day, one thief enters his house to steal, to rob very precious jewels of his devoted wife, and he's found out. So what others would have done was to call police and have him arrested. But Basavanna said, "Oh, look, a thief has entered the house of a greater thief and asked his wife, give all your jewels to him." And he was so astounded. He was so converted by the power of love that he became a disciple of Basavanna and gave up his evil ways. Similarly, you find in Buddha's life how the Angulimala, who was a criminal, by the very presence of Buddha, the power of truth and non-violence, he became converted and became his disciples and took to the way of enlightenment. That is the power of non-violence. That is the power of truth and non-violence. And this was what Gandhiji was trying to practice. And he was so humble enough to say that he has not attained any degree of success in it, but his endeavor will be to ever strive to attain the utmost point of cultivation of the virtues of truth and non-violence. So we can see here from this discussion that virtue of non-violence is a fruit of spiritual knowledge. It does not come by itself. That's the reason why Gandhiji is misunderstood today. Unless you have spiritual knowledge, unless you have understood the true nature of the self and the justice of the law of karma and reincarnation, you will never understand what non-violence means. There are many wrong notions about it. And some say it is cowardice. It is not cowardice. It is, if you can say what Basavanna did, what Buddha did, what Jesus did, was it cowardice? So it is wrong notion. If you are non-violent, then others will take advantage of you and smash you. We will see how wrong notion this is presently. What Gandhiji said was, non-violence does not mean you turn a blind eye to injustice happening to someone. For instance, he says, if a woman is under threat of a violent person, in the danger of being molested, Gandhiji said, I will put my principle of non-violence aside and use physical force to save the woman. So, and you find in again life of Guru Nanak, you know, Guru Nanak knew that from the northwestern region a great conqueror was to come and destroy the towns and villages and put people to terrible torture and kill them, there'll be bloodbath. He knew that. And it did happen. And Guru Nanak was very critical of the rulers of the state. How could the ruler of the state not raise an army to protect innocent people from the evildoers? So to raise an army to protect evildoers from doing harm to innocent people is not violence. It is a duty. It is a duty. So there is a reason why HBB says the same thing in her Kid Theosophy. See, it is violence to talk ill of others, to criticize others. But if, and also to, to point out the mistakes done by others. If this is not done in certain cases, and by not doing a harm is done to a important cause or to society, it will become your duty to speak out. Then it will not be slander, it will not be gossip, it will be duty. She says, justice consists in doing no injury to any living being, but justice commands us also never to allow injury to be done to the many or even to one innocent person by allowing the guilty to go unchecked. So, if you consider these important ethical precepts, we can intelligently apply the principles to the best of our abilities to improve our character. And HBB says, if by allowing them to go unchecked, either persons, other persons may thereby injured, it is certainly our duty to obviate the danger by warning privately. It is not evil speaking. But true or false, no accusations against another person should ever be spread abroad. That is violence. But if duty demands, duty has to be done. So we must keep these nuances in mind when we study and practice the principle of truth and non-violence. Therefore, violence, himsa, it arises from personal self-centered thought and action. That's where the seeds of violence reside. Selfishness. Selfishness is what? It is a child of ignorance. Ignorance of what? Ignorance of the nature of the true self and the law of justice. So this ignorance produces delusion. So that's why in the Sanat Sujatiya, a marvelous passage, a chapter, most important, I think every student of Theosophy must procure Sanat Sujatiya from R.K. Ashram or Vedanta Book House. Very important, very beautiful passage. There a statement is made. He who thinks self to be what it is not, such a deluded person, what sin will he not commit? he will not know that he is committing sin. But the very fact that his thought and action is rooted in personal self-centered violence is there. That's why Bhagavad Gita also is said, self is the enemy of self. Self is also the friend of self. How is it possible? Because when self is not conquered by self, when the lower self is not conquered by the higher self, then the self of man is enemy to man. Man becomes the enemy to himself. He thinks he's going on highway of duty and benevolence, but he's doing violence, he's doing injustice. But when self is conquered by the self, then the self becomes friendly to man. Whole nature becomes friendly to man. As we must recall what the great master says, whose words HBB quotes in the five messages to American Theosophists. What does the master says? Master is pointing out how your selfish intent and motive brings you misery. It does not bring you happiness. What does he say? He says, I quote, let not the fruit of good karma be your motive. For your karma, good or bad, being one and the common property of all mankind, nothing good or bad can happen to you that is not shared by many others. Hence, your motive, being selfish, can only generate a double effect, good and bad, and will either nullify your good action or turn it to another man's profit. And he goes on to unquote. And he goes on to say again, quote, there is no happiness for one who is ever thinking of self and forgetting other selves, unquote. So, non-violence, practice of non-violence then means and consists in renunciation of self-interest in performance of duties. Doing duties with the good of the world in view. Doing duties without self-interest, but with the good of your fellow men at heart. To live to benefit mankind is the first step. To practice the six glorious virtues, the second. These are the precepts we must try to put into practice. When Gandhiji spent his whole life in practicing this with such supreme self-sacrificing effort and was saying that he has not attained any degree of success in it, we can imagine how difficult it is, but nevertheless, that is the ideal towards which every right-thinking person has to strive. As Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, even a little of this practice saves man from great danger. Why? Because all our circumstances of life, fortune, misfortune, where do they come from? Our thoughts, our intent, our motive. Our thoughts produce innumerable circumstances in which we become entangled. So, if our thoughts have a selfish basis, the circumstances which produce, we become entangled in it and struggle against the effect of our own unconscious misdeeds, unconscious vices, unconscious hurt that we do to others and all forms of life. So, by practicing this, even a little bit produces benevolent and helpful circumstances. And when this practice is taken up right in earnest, like Gandhiji tried, everyone can try and must try. Krishna says, he bursts the bonds of karma and purify his body, his mind, and his heart, the threefold purification. Now our mind, our heart, and our body are full of elemental lives produced by our lower thoughts. They are entities which envelop our body, pervade our body, reside in our mind, reside in our nerves and blood, and reside in our heart. Is it so easy to displace them? It is only through long practice that realization of the true self and conviction of universal brotherhood, foundation of truth and non-violence, by practicing it gradually and slowly, as your higher thought and higher practice gain strength, the old undesirable tendencies get displaced by the true one. And the threefold upadhis, body, soul and mind, begin by degrees to align themselves in line with your higher self, and the light of higher self begin to shine through the man. So hitherto man was slave to his lower passions, senses and the minds and desires. When they are conquered, when the animal is conquered, then animal becomes a slave. Slave of the God within. And, you know, if you remember what was said in the closing part of the devotional book, Through the Gates of Gold. The God in service of the animal. When God is service of the animal, what do we mean by that? When you are living a selfish, self-centered life, all that we wish and accomplish will be accomplished because will stands behind desire. So God is in service of the animal. There can be no beast worse than man. But on the other hand, when the animal is subdued and completely humanized and divinized and made subservient to the God within, man becomes the greatest benefactor of the world. So, it is our duty, after having come in this life, to strive towards our highest ideal of bodhisattvas, who are the very embodiment of truth and non-violence. And our topic is in today's world. Is it applicable to today's world? It is applicable in all ages, at all times. In today's world, more so. To everyone who strives to do this, reduces so much of evil in the world. And we have the advantage also of this dark age. Because in this dark age, there is a great momentum, of the force of life. So even a little bit of practice, whether in the right or wrong direction, produces enormous results, we are taught. So in our present day world, where there is so much of wickedness and selfishness, it is more relevant to practice by all right thinking people this virtues of truth and non-violence. And by doing so, we help in reducing so much of darkness in the world and give an impulse to the whole of humanity and the kingdoms of nature to a higher life. I think we must stop here and leave some time for deliberation.